Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. December 1st marks a big date for millions of American workers. The Fair Labor Standards Act is being adjusted to add more workers to the rolls of those eligible for overtime pay. But there are some consequences. It'll add 4 million workers to the overtime rolls at time and a half. However, the increased cost to employers may mean some workers will lose their jobs. Here to help us sort it all out are Ann Plunkett, human resources consultant and lawyer who is president of Workplace Partners, Inc. Russ Regan is an employment law attorney with the Regan Law Firm. Thank you both so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Nice to be here.
Thank you.
And let me just start with you. In a very general way, can you tell me what is changing and who's affected by all of this?
Well, basically what's changing is that the threshold, salary threshold for non-exempt workers is being increased from $23,660 to $47,476,000 per year. So what that means as a practical matter is that employees who've historically been paid as an exempt employee and who were paid under the $47,476 new threshold will now be entitled to overtime pay.
So salaried people who are once salaried workers now become hourly workers, in effect.
Well, maybe, yes. Huh. So the way it works is that the salary threshold has gone up. And so what we're left with is the previously characterized employees who were exempt, and they were making in between those two amounts. And so those are the employees now that employers are going to have to focus on and figure out what to do with. So either they'll have to make them hourly employees, or they'll have to pay time and a half overtime if those employees work more than 40 hours in a week.
Or Russ, I suppose they could also increase their salaries to $47,476 plus $1 or more and deal with the situation that way.
They could. And you know, this is not necessarily a doomsday scenario for employers because, you know, if you're paying somebody $24,000, you're not going to double their pay just to comply with an overtime act. I mean, it's cheaper just to pay them overtime in that scenario. But you can also limit their hours to 40 or less because overtime pay is only an entitlement to somebody who works more than 40 hours in a week. So, you know, if you've got 45 hours of work to do in a week, you can give that 45 hours to one person or you can spread it among more than one person so that nobody's working overtime.
Well, how are employers handling this? It's my impression that a lot of them are scrambling. They don't quite get what this is all about or they're concerned about it somehow. How are they handling it?
Well, I think the easiest way to go about handling it is, number one, it affects people who are exempt under three exemptions. Now, keep in mind there are scores of exemptions for different categories of workers, but there's only three that are at play here: executive, administrative, and professional.
Exempt meaning exempt from overtime.
Correct.
Right.
And so if you – I guess the first part of the analysis is does an employee fit within one of those three categories currently? Right. And if the answer is yes, and that's the analysis that's done by the employer, then and assuming that person is making less than $46,000 in salary currently, then they have to – undergo an analysis of, okay, how do we comply with the new law? But if you don't fit in one of those three categories currently, then they're not going to be impacted by these new regulations. Mm-hmm. If their salary is already $46,000 or above, they're not going to be impacted. So it's kind of the middle segment of those groups that's going to be impacted.
And I've seen some concerns that this could impact productivity in that people will have to stop at a certain time when they were – because the employers would not want to pay them and that therefore work they might have accomplished beyond 40 hours is not going to get done.
I think as a practical matter, employees are going to have to do a better job of managing workflow and productivity. I think you're right.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be a challenge in some cases. I mean, let's look at some organizations, nonprofits, for instance. We have a sound clip here I'd like to play from Sheila Oliveri, who works for a nonprofit organization. She's concerned about the flexibility to work a certain number of hours one week under 40, and maybe the next week would need to work more. Here are her concerns, if we can address those.
As of right now, we are pretty much have very flexible schedules. And if I want to work from home, I can. If I want to work from my office, I can. If I want to work at 2 o'clock in the morning, I can, you know, as long as I get my work done. And the decision to take this job, you know, going from part-time to full-time again was really dependent on me being able to be flexible and work kind of my own schedule. So what worries me about the new regulation is that, you know, some weeks I might work 50 hours, but some weeks I might only work 20 hours. And, you know, that's okay. And it doesn't affect my job, it doesn't affect my performance, and it doesn't affect the way my nonprofit pays me because I'm a salaried worker. So as I understand it, with the new regulation, that's not going to be possible anymore, because if I work more than 40 hours in 1 week, I'm going to be required to take overtime for that. And my organization has a very small budget. We're very tight on our expenditures. So, you know, that's going to be really difficult. I'm not going to put in and tax my organization because our resources are finite.
Russ, what do you think? I mean, does she have a point there? Does she going to have to adjust the way she works?
I think she will, but I think the more important point here is that there's several ways to deal with that scenario. Number one is she can be paid time and a half for the overtime hours that she works in the week that she works 50 hours. That's mm-hmm. one way to deal with it. Another way to do it is for the employer to put a workplace rule in place that says she's not allowed to work more than 40 hours. I do that with my own staff at my office where I say, look, we need you to work 40 hours, no more than that. And, you know, if we need you to work overtime, obviously we can change the dynamic. But you can have a work rule that says you're not allowed to work more than 40 hours. And as long as that's enforced and the employee abides by it, then, you know, it won't cost the employer any more money.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good for the employer, but maybe not so good for the employee.
Well, I think that, you know, the Fair Labor Standards Act is nothing new. The statute was passed in 1938. And the reason it was passed was unemployment was at a record high, and the government had put in place essentially a tax. If an employer had 60 hours of work to distribute, it could give it to one employee, and under the new work or overtime rules would have to pay 20 hours of overtime, or it could distribute those hours 30 and 30 to two employees. And so it's a tax on employers that choose to hoard the work among a smaller group of people. So, you know, the employer can always choose to distribute that work in a different way, and employees are getting paid for the hours they're working.
And this is one heck of a jump. I guess it's been 12 years or so since the last adjustment was made, but it's been doubled. I mean, the threshold has now been doubled,
right?
Which has caught a lot of people's attention.
Right. I think that's the biggest struggle for employers, is that it is such a big jump. But I think it may have been even longer than 12 years. I think that the 23,000 threshold has been in place for a very long time. And I think there are lots of situations where employers may have been taking advantage of that. And so it was probably time for an adjustment. There was certainly an argument that this was an awfully big one.
Go ahead, Russ.
And if you look at the dollar value vis-a-vis inflation of the current regulations, in other words, the ones that are going to be in place until the end of November, back in the 70s and 80s or when those regs were first put in place, they were consistent with what the new pay rates are going to be vis-a-vis the workforce. Mm. So those, you know, the current regs, yeah, they do seem like a big jump. It's a double in pay, but it's an adjustment for inflation that's occurred over a period of 20, 30 years.
Mm. Going back to Sheila's case here, I have a note asking, in a pay period, can Sheila report 50 hours in a week 1 week and only 30 the next week? So over the course of the 2 weeks, she's got 80 hours, two times 40, which is, you know, the level there. Russ, you're shaking your head.
No, she can't. The Fair Labor Standards Act looks at each work week with blinders on. Mm-hmm. So each work week is a separate entity for purposes of the law. So I can work 1 hour this week and 100 hours next week. Well, I'm obviously not entitled to overtime for the 1 hour this week, but next week I'd be entitled to 60 hours of overtime. So it's just each segment is a one-week segment.
Yeah. And in any sense, is this discussion we're having right now moot? And I say that because December 1st is the deadline, but my understanding is that Congress is taking a look at this, and the House has already asked for a delay of 6 months, has approved a delay. Senate has yet to act. Apparently, the Trump administration is also taking a look at it and may step in at some point. So are we having this discussion too early?
Well, I don't think it's moot. I think that anything can happen with the new administration, and I don't think any of us will be in a position to predict what's going to happen. But as a practical matter, because this date is looming, it's December 1st, I think employers would be well advised to go forward with their plans to be in complete compliance.
They certainly don't have much time, Russ. And a lot of them, again, are still scrambling.
Yeah, and they should be scrambling because I think that they're going to have to comply with this reg come December 1st. I agree with Ann that nobody really knows what's going to happen beyond that with the new administration coming in January with a GOP-controlled Congress and White House. It's certainly possible. I mean, there's two ways that I think they could go about changing or maybe minimizing the impact of these rules. One is Congress passing a statute that impacts it in some way, does away with the regs, changes it, something like that.
Not likely before December 1st.
Oh, sure. It won't occur. I'm talking about looking ahead to early 2017. But I also think that another way is that the new President Trump could have the DOL go through notice and comment through the rulemaking process, just as the Obama administration did to put these regs in place. The Trump administration could go through that same process and do away with it or change it in some way. But that takes months, if not years. It's a very long and drawn out process, and it doesn't happen with the stroke of the president's pen.
I was just going to ask that. If, in fact, he couldn't, as the President Obama's done on so many occasions, simply issue an executive order.
I think that likely would not be upheld in the context of wage and hour laws and a statute that's currently in place and basically regulations on how to interpret that. That would be very unusual.
Well, we have to take a break. Let's do that now. We'll come back. We have a caller who would like to get into the conversation. We're talking about changes in the overtime formula, which are due to take place on December 1st in this country. It's going to affect 4 million workers, including about 300,000 in Missouri and Illinois. So a lot of folks are impacted by this. My guest in studio, Ann Plunkett, a human resources consultant and an attorney, president of Workplace Partners, Inc. Russ Riggin is an employment law attorney with the Riggin Law Firm. Back to continue our conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to be a part of it, give us a call, 382-8255. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back. We have a number of callers. Let's get some of them into the conversation, then we'll continue ours. We'll start with Nathan calling from Webster Groves. Nathan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Don. This is Nate. Thank you. And I'm interested in the panel's answer to the following question. So I'm launching a business right now that is a subscription-based home repair and maintenance business in the St. Louis area. And I will be placing technicians in homes on a regular basis, and they will handle work, and we bid the work to take a certain amount of time. And the technician is responsible to complete the work within that amount of time. If they complete the work faster, they get paid the full amount for the time. If they, if it takes them longer to do it, then they get paid for the time that was bid. And so keeping track of time with technicians, I'm curious to know, how the panel would respond. How would that impact when the guys are getting paid for the time that we bid. If it takes them a little longer, that's the way to get it paid. So how do we do that with this legislation?
Who would like to take that?
Well, Ann? This legislation doesn't really impact that type of scenario. This legislation is geared to who's entitled to overtime pay and when they are. The basic rule of thumb for an employer is that you have to pay people for the time they work. And in the scenario that you're describing, I think that the employer may have some latitude. If you decide to pay them for time that they're not working, you're certainly free to do that. But the overtime pay question is really a different issue, I think, than the scenario you're describing.
Nate, my suggestion on those workers, even though I don't think they're exempt, I think they're non-exempt workers. They're performing manual labor type tasks. I think the easiest way to do it is you're required to track their hours. So I think you need to track their hours. They need to be turning in a timesheet. And then I think it's fine to pay them based on a job basis or a, you know, a flat rate basis, but you're going to have to reduce that to an hourly rate for purposes of calculating a time and a half overtime rate if they work more than 40 hours a week.
What about workers who work partially on commission? I mean, do they – you'd mentioned, Russ, that there are some exemptions – and not to misuse that word or overuse that word here, but there are some exemptions to these rules.
And there are exemptions that apply to commissioned workers. They're outside the three that we're talking about here today, but there are, for example, outside sales. You don't have to pay overtime or minimum wage to outside sales workers, but they truly have to be outside. You know, you can't have them at your workplace having them make calls. They have to be out making calls in the field. There's another retailer service establishment exemption to where – you know, it's like people who sell clothing at Nordstrom or people who sell Maytag refrigerators, you know, things like that, certain sales type industries that even though they're in-house, they're still exempt.
What about people like journalists who have no prescribed hours and they're not making that 47 or 44-7, whatever is the number, the 45,000 figure?
I think that there's a possibility that a journalist would fall into one of the exemptions that Russ described, and that would be the professional exemption. And so I think that journalists would be considered an exempt employee under that if they had if they met the duties test.
How about first responders who aren't making that ceiling?
I believe there's another exemption for first responders. Like Russ mentioned, there's a lot of other exemptions out there. For example, teachers aren't covered by the overtime rules.
Where does one go to find out what these exemptions are? Is there a place? Is it the Labor Department, Department of Labor?
So it's in the statute themselves. It's in the regulations. But I think the easiest way for the layperson to find them is to go on the Wage and Hour Division of the Department of Labor's website, and they're listed there.
There's another issue that comes up and has come up, and I have a clip here that I'd like to play from a Michael Byrd who runs an architectural firm. He has employees who fall into the hourly, full-time, and flex-time workers, which is another issue that's come up. Let's hear what his concern is, then we can address it.
It's awkward because it takes a situation that was very settled internally and creates a wrinkle where we have to come to some new understanding or put some kind of limits on things that don't make sense to any of the parties involved. And so I'm not really sure how we're going to establish that, because there will likely be times when these folks will put in more than 40 hours. It won't happen very often, but it will happen. And they don't expect to be paid time and a half. And at their salary level up until this month, nobody else would have expected it either. So I don't think it is the intent of the rule to put these people in that position and to put the employer in a position where we're discouraged from giving project managers leeway to do a little extra time if need be to get the project in on time. You know, it just creates a very strange situation. I think for professional flex time or part-time workers, the rule needs to be clarified.
What do you think, Ann?
Well, I think the caller's right that there's a lot of clarification that we're going to need as the new regulations are implemented. And certainly flexible working scenarios that used to work very well for businesses, both for employers and employees, aren't going to work as well now. We saw that in the nonprofit scenario and again in this business scenario.
You mentioned a duties test a couple of times. What exactly is that, for clarification?
The duties test is the test that Russ was referring to with respect to the three main exemptions, that in order to be exempt from overtime pay, you have to meet the duties test under one of those three main exemptions or under one of the other many exemptions. Basically, you have to have certain job duties that keep you at the level of someone who's exempt from overtime.
Russ, does this mean that businesses are going to have to put in time clocks? Go back to that.
Well, keep in mind that for non-exempt employees, that you have to, you have a legal obligation as an employer to track and record and maintain records of hours worked. That's not changing under the regulations. But the fact that raising the salary threshold may create more non-exempt workers may create a requirement where you're having to keep records on more of your workforce. And I think that's really the dynamic here.
There are some concerns by people out there who are looking at this and wondering if they are not, quote, as productive because they don't work a longer number of hours as they have been before, about the, how they're going to be evaluated by employers if they don't get the work done in a shorter amount of time perhaps. How they're going to be evaluated if it could cost them their jobs or be unfairly evaluated. Is this an issue that is something you're thinking about?
I think it's an issue, and it's probably the major issue with this whole change in the regulations. I mean, my firm handles a lot of cases for workers bringing suit to enforce wage and hour laws. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of employers are forcing off-the-clock work, or we're seeing a lot of that because they don't want to pay overtime. And so they're just telling people, well, you just got to get all of it done. The problem is I've got a 50 or 60-hour workload, mm-hmm. and I've got to, quote-unquote, get it all done in 40 hours, and it's not workable. And so I think a lot of what employees are doing now is resorting to self-help by, I'm just going to write down 40 hours, mm-hmm. but I'm going to work 50 or 60 because I'm a go-getter, and that's what I'm going to need to do to get the job done. But the problem with that is the law doesn't permit the employer to accept the benefits of those extra hours of work, especially if it knows that the employee is working them.
This is obviously a complicated situation, and we've already established, I think, that a lot of employers are still trying to sort it out. Assuming this goes into effect on the 1st, as it apparently is going to do, what happens to the employer who doesn't follow the rules? Anne?
Well, the penalties for a non-compliant employer are big, and not only is the Department of Labor eager to enforce the rules against an employer who's not paying overtime properly, but also private lawyers take those cases too. And it's back pay, it can be double pay, it can even be triple pay.
Russ, you're a lawyer, as is Anne. What? Your take.
Well, and you know, there's two paths to enforce the law. One is, like Dan said, the DOL can come in. And frankly, if you're an employer, you'd probably rather see the DOL than see my name on the pleadings of a lawsuit, because the DOL is very soft on employers. They are only going to go after the back pay. They're not going to go after what's called liquidated damages, which basically doubles the amount the employee's owed. The DOL is not going to tack on attorney's fees, whereas the employee, if they don't go to the DOL and they're backlogged with cases and they don't have time to mess with a lot of stuff, but private firms like mine file suits on behalf of employees and we go after the bull boat, you know, so you're going to be on the hook for back pay, liquidated damages, attorney's fees, because the employer has to pay my firm's fees if the employer loses.
And is this a good thing, what we're talking about here? I mean, is it a good thing for the workers who stand and make a little more money? That obviously is good, but it could cost jobs. It could hurt small businesses. You wonder, with the government getting into it, with all the regulations and all the things we've been talking about, exemptions and non-exemptions, is it a good thing?
I believe overall it is a good thing. I do believe, as I mentioned earlier, that the jump, almost doubling the threshold, yeah, was awfully aggressive. But on the other hand, I've seen a lot of employers who would work someone 50, 60 hours a week who's barely making a poverty-level wage of $25,000 a year. And so that's certainly going to be addressed now. And to, in that respect, I think that it is a good thing.
And you're nodding, Russ.
I think it's the ever-present tension between, you know, on the one hand, someone's right to run their business the way they want to run it without regulation, and on the other hand, making sure that workers are paid for the time that they put in. So it's the example of workers' rights versus employer rights.
Let's take one more call. Mark will join us from Swansea. Go ahead, Mark. You're on the air.
Yeah, you practically just answered my question, because what I was going to ask is, you know, let's talk about the threshold a little bit more. It's going from 11,000 to 22,000. But going back to the duties test, I mean, what company honestly pays a manager, an executive, poverty wages, $11 an hour? I mean, yeah, it's a huge jump. But if you're talking about minimum wage employees, like a manager or assistant manager at a fast food restaurant, what's wrong with paying that person 10 extra hours a week if they're working 50 hours a week at McDonald's.
All right, thanks for the call. I'm not sure the threshold numbers there jive with what we've been talking about.
I think he may have been talking about the hourly wage.
Yeah. Any thoughts on that, Russ? I have a final thought here. One of our producers is asking, how do you bring this up with an employer if it hasn't been brought up to you? I mean, how do you basically negotiate with an employer? We've got a little over a minute left.
Well, I think an employee would be doing their employer a good service to mention it to the employer if it hasn't already been brought up to the employees. And I would suggest that the employee just go to the employer and say, I understand that the rules are changing and I'm curious about how it's going to affect me and my job or us as an employer. And get the conversation started that way.
This is a conversation that should be had, though, just to make sure that everyone is on the same page.
Well, right. And I think it's like anything else with the employment relationship. You want to try and do it amicably and diplomatically so that you don't get fired for complaining about unpaid overtime.
We've only got a minute left. Is there a final thought that, Russ, I'll start with you, that we should leave our listeners with who are thinking about this and concerned about it?
I think in terms of advising employers, I think there's three things you can do to try to comply with this new law. You can either pay overtime, you can raise workers' salaries to keep them exempt if they're already exempt but won't be under the new regs, or you can limit their hours to 40 hours a week. I think those are really the three things that you can do or some combination of those things to comply with the new law.
And a final thought?
I think what I'd add to those options would be I've seen some employers shifting job duties from non-exempt employees to exempt employees. So there may be a reevaluation of who's doing the work, and I think a lot of employers will be looking at that also.
And time is a waste, and we're fast approaching it. Thank you so much. Ann Plunkett and Russ Regan, thank you for being with us and trying to clarify some of these things. I hope we have for a lot of folks. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.